Well, hello. It's Truth and Double Daring with Dottie and Diane. Join us for some fun and fascinating conversation.
Well, hello, everyone. It's Diane with Truth and Double Daring. Little intro to our podcast. As always, another fabulous guest. This guest, Morgan Richardson, is a member of the New York State Bar Association, where she's currently serving on the Committee of Women in Law. So she is a super duper amazing lawyer who, if I hope none of you need a divorce, but if you did, you'd want to hire her. I mean, she's amazing, amazing. So she does arbitration and mediation. So not a lot of lawyers do that, but she does. And she does it very well. In fact, she was in the top 40 family lawyers under 40 in New York. I mean, that's how good she is. And she's contributed to Huffington Post and the Good Men's Project. I mean, she's done tons. But the what I got from this particular podcast and this interview is someone who does a fantastic job as a lawyer, but also is connected to her heart and her mind. I mean, in a way that's compassionate, which is what we're all about. And she really wants to support women in moving forward and taking good care of themselves in life in general. So anyway, she's a mom, she's divorced, remarried, 10 of kids, just really cares about people. And she's funny and fun and open-hearted, and even like we did a little bit of joking, like maybe a lot of joking at the end. So make sure you listen all the way to the end, because honestly, the last few minutes are very juicy. Okay, so I'll in there, let's hop on over and join Dottie with Truth and Double Daring, and we'll see you in the podcast.
Welcome to Truth and Double Daring, everyone. Hi, Dottie.
Are you Hi, honey.
There you are. I see you. Your bright, shiny face. Yay. Well, we have someone very, very interesting, very, very interesting on our podcast today. And I don't know her, so I get to meet her with all of you folks that are listening. Morgan Richardson is, you're a lawyer, right? I'm going to have you introduce yourself, but a lawyer on the East Coast. So Morgan, why don't you just dive in and tell us who are you and why you're on this podcast, what you'd like to share with us.
Sure. So I am a divorce attorney. I am a divorced parent of three children. And I also mediate as well as litigate cases in New York City.
Right. Wow. And so we could talk for about 92 hours on that topic.
Yes.
So you're in New York as a lawyer. Now you're a mediator and a divorce lawyer. How does that work?
I mean, there are two different approaches to the same goal. The goal being the parties want a divorce. A litigation would involve me representing one party, like the husband or the wife,
right?
The other party, and we will go to court and we will fight about what's going to happen with their lives. Mediation is sort of reframing this and trying to give the parties back control over their lives, saying, this is your marriage. Now let's help you figure out how to undo it in a way that makes sense to you. So we're not necessarily bound by what a court would do. We can come up with more creative solutions. And in that setting, I would be meeting with both parties to try to help them work through that.
Great. Wow. And what percentage are litigating and, you know, kind of battling it out? And how do you choose mediation?
Here in New York City, I would say probably 90% are litigating.
Yeah.
The mediation option is, I think it's maybe lesser known to a lot of people. But also, I think it takes a certain quality in a relationship to recognize, how do we go about doing this in a way that's going to be amicable, how do I continue to extend the caring and the feelings that I had for you during this process? So it takes a special sort of personality and situation to sort of get over that personal hurt, come to mediation and say, let's just work on this from a practical perspective.
Yeah. It's almost like they have to, on some level, like each other still and respect each other.
But honestly, that makes it a little more difficult for me because you can see they'll care about each other. And when I'm representing someone in a litigation, I can always say, oh, well, don't mind him. He's an a-hole. Let's do this, that, and the other. I can't do that in a room where both parties are sitting there. Even if I'm sort of feeling sorry for one or the other of them, I can't, you know, sort of shift blame. I have to still try to take a neutral position.
Yeah. Okay. So you want to ask the question that we always ask in the beginning, Dottie, kind of dive in with, because we're Truth and Double Daring.
Certainly. One of our key questions is, what is the key truth for you that has governed your life? If this is the work you're doing at the moment and it's feeding you, I believe that it's something that's connected to a value you've always possessed. It may be new wisdom from your life experience, but a value system, a truth that you've always lived by. You can let me know if I'm incorrect on that. I will survive that trauma. And is that a truth for you? Something that you have always lived with that you're now expressing in this way? Or has your truth evolved and changed as you've grown?
Okay. Well, I think my key truth would be that I believe in the power of each of us as individuals to survive emotional trauma and to embrace change and to control how we change and how we move forward. And I see that on a regular basis every day with my practice. And I also experienced that as somebody who went through my own divorce, dealing with small children and the breakup of a marriage. So I fully believe that that's my key truth. I would say, yeah, I think that probably extends going back in time too. Just a full belief in how much ownership we have over ourselves as individuals and the capacity to embrace change, even if we don't necessarily want to change when it presents itself.
So I love that. So you believe in the power of the individual, that they hold their own power. I love that. You're almost sounding a little bit like a therapist. And of course, you know, we're both therapists. So we're like, yeah, to hear a lawyer kind of do a little therapy speak. But I think a lot of it is psychological. And I think that you are often, especially as a mediator, you're probably doing a lot of that, talking about feelings and talking about empowerment and talking about how to come up with the best results for everyone, including the kids. Now you're divorced, had three small children. Were you a divorce lawyer when you got a divorce?
Yes, I was. Yes.
Yeah. Unwrap that a little bit. How'd that go?
Well, I think we had an extremely amicable divorce. I mean, we did. We are lucky in that we both were in agreement that we should put the children first. As long as you keep your focus on your kids during this process, it's much easier to sort of ignore and resolve your own personal hurts in your own space, and then just work towards how do we, sort of unravel the marriage. And he lives very close to my house. He lives about 10 blocks away. We have a very, fair parenting schedule that's very flexible. We work really well together. And I've known him for 20 years, so we still maintain that friendship.
Yeah. It's evidence that you married the right guy and you, because of the way you were able to divorce him, he was the right guy in terms of having children and being able to co-parent. And it wasn't was any of it a battle for you? Or it was, you two did really, okay. You get gold stars in my book.
We really were able to preserve what we could of our friendship and just work towards just a resolution of, assets and debts and wrap it all up nicely. And I'm remarried now. And he still comes over some mornings. He'll text us, hey, I'm down in your kitchen making breakfast. You guys get the kids ready when you wake up. So it's still an amicable situation.
That's so cool.
With your husband as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. Well, how did you get to the place of deciding to be a divorce lawyer in New York City? And I think you're licensed in Maryland and DC also.
Yes, I am. You know, I was doing corporate litigation and I found it extremely dull. I mean,
let's just be honest here. Dull.
There's no other way to put it. It's a bunch of papers and, you know, it wasn't interactive. And I started taking divorce cases pro bono, which is free for domestic violence victims and things like that through different organizations. And I realized that it was just much more my speed. It was directly addressing someone who was in a crisis. And to a certain degree, I view it as a lot of therapy. I'm a very expensive therapist, but it is sort of a therapeutic process. And I've had really good experiences, and I value it so much more because you really see the effects of what you're doing on someone's life and how you can improve their situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I like to say a lot of divorce lawyers aren't as friendly, or maybe they're more focused on the legal fees. But I try to focus on just the personal side of it, and I find it very rewarding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. As a business coach, one of my focuses has been on supporting more women. I do executive leadership coaching, supporting more women in business, in politics, and in medicine. Because I believe we bring another whole approach to what we do. Yeah. That women, and this is a generalization because there's always exceptions, but women tend to bring their heart and their soul into the work that they do. And it really changes the balance in an organization and politics as well as in the distribution of medicine. All right. So for you, are there women there in the city or in your legal associations that are supporting you in bringing a very different approach to the work? Or are you the oddity, if you will, in the organization?
I think that professionally, I've found a lot of female attorneys to be very supportive, just of other female attorneys. This is a very difficult industry. You know, from when I was born, that was in the 70s, there were, you know, women were just starting to really become lawyers and get involved in things, and they've had a hard road to get where we are. So I think that now when you're in different organizations, and I'm a member of the new section, Women in the Law section for the New York State Bar Association, we were a committee for the last, I don't even know how many years, and I've been involved with the committee, but now we've been approved to be a section, which gives us greater spending power, greater membership and outreach. So, you know, I think we are recognizing that as, you know, professionally as female attorneys, we need to do more and we can do better. And women are very supportive in this profession.
Helping you out. Do you have a number of organizations in which that supports you?
Definitely. And you find support in very interesting places these days. I'm a member of a Facebook group that's a secret Facebook group of 11,000 female attorneys across the country.
Wow.
And it is my tribe. It's like speaking to myself. They have great perspectives. There's so much diversity and it's incredibly supportive.
Good.
11,000 members. Wow.
That's terrific. That is terrific because my experience is so many women are working in isolation.
And honestly, I think that that's where social media has started to become so revolutionary because I remember being very depressed 10 years ago, 12 years ago when I was doing corporate litigation, not just because the work wasn't fulfilling, but I didn't have that sort of outreach that I do now. I didn't have that network.
Right.
it's very important, I think, for people to reach out to other professionals.
Yeah.
Oh, it really is. And I think it's to reach out to men and women in your field, but also to have the specialty of reaching out to women in your field that support not just your approach to law and your approach to divorce, but your approach to life and being a single mother and living in the city and all of those other factors that go into living. In speaking to some folks this morning, how would we bring our heart and soul out into the work that we're doing? And you're speaking compassionately about your clients and about, you know, the work that you're doing. And in doing so, you have to keep getting fed or you end up giving from your depletion rather than your fullness.
Yeah.
You know, so it's far more than just, if you will, just the legalism. There's the heart and the soul that you're investing in your work. And that's really amazing that, and I'm thrilled for you that you have that kind of feeding taking place.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
well, you said you started in corporate law.
Yeah.
Is there some kind of personality test you take to decide? Because it was so boring and dull to you, and yet that's how you started. So is that where everyone starts or not?
I think that I was a little naive, and I think a lot of attorneys, when they first get out of law school, they aren't really sure what different areas of the law are going to be like. So they try it. And then after a few years, firms start to say, no, that's what you do. That's your specialty.
Right.
And I believed I went to law school so that I could have options, so that I could learn how to understand the law in different areas. So I was nervous to switch into divorce full time, but I took a leap of faith. I jumped and I did it. And it was an incredible learning curve at first. Mm-hmm. I remember my first client was telling me this horrible story. His wife had like gotten an order of protection against him, and he couldn't see his children, and there were all these things happening. And I was thinking, gosh, this guy really needs a lawyer. And then I was like, oh my God, I got to do something here.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, just because there is a learning curve doesn't mean you shouldn't rise, you know, challenge yourself and meet the challenge, push yourself, because otherwise life kind of gets boring.
Yeah.
I truly believe, which is, you know, that this is called double daring, truth and double daring, because we both believe that if you don't keep challenging yourself, if you don't keep facing those dayers, if you don't keep jumping off those cliffs, you stagnate.
Yeah.
As you know, Diane does coaching as well. She loves the whole therapeutic end. I've moved more into the executive leadership coach, the women's business coach. And my experience is that all that growth you're talking about, it means confronting more of you than you needed previously. It means, and it isn't just necessarily different situations that cause you to grow. Sometimes it's your own. You've reached a plateau and you know you're done.
Yeah.
I can't, if I go any longer here, I'm going to be surviving. I've got to stay passionately invested in my own life. And that means, what ways can I grow? What ways can I change? How can I evolve to stay alive? And really, I see this as a spiritual journey to begin with. So it's, how can you keep challenging yourself to stay alive and keep growing and moving?
Yeah.
Especially if you stay in the same profession.
You know? Well, I took a leap. And when I'm saying a leap, I walked away from a very high six-figure firm job with a 500 attorney firm. And I opened my own practice as a solo attorney handling divorce cases.
Yeah.
And I did that in 2010. And from there, I grew my practice. I started hiring attorneys. I had about 5 attorneys. And now I've just moved into this firm, and I brought one of my associates with me. And now it's a new challenge. It's how to fit that, you know, what I was doing, the divorce, back into a larger firm that has better support for my clients, better administrative things for me, so I can take some admin work off of my plate.
Yes. Which is the dull, boring stuff.
For some of us, some people love that.
Well, no, I know.
It's not us.
Well, this is why I was thinking, we were talking about the Enneagram, which is just a way of kind of looking at, you know, where is, what motivates you? how do you kind of approach life? And it's just a way of sort of looking at that a test or a quiz, if you will. And I, Morgan, there's not one ounce of me that ever would say, now there's someone who should be a corporate lawyer. You're such a, you know, you've got a lot of energy and vibrance, and not that people that do corporate, I'm sure they're quite lovely and are just bubbly as can be in their own way. But I just see you as wanting to connect with people more, that's more important. At least that's a sense that I get of who you are. So it was a huge risk financially. And if we focus on the money, then these risks almost seem undoable in a way. It's like, why? And we, you know, don't we feel like that would be the stupidest thing I could ever do? And yet sometimes that's exactly what we need to do.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't focus on that. And I definitely was nervous to walk away from the money. But at the same time, I was at a point where I was just so desperately unhappy with what I was. And when you're spending, you know, 10 hours a day doing this kind of corporate work, it's taking away your time from your kids, it's taking away your time from other hobbies. And I just couldn't do it any longer.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Thank God you had the willingness and the ability to take that leap.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure exactly looking back how I did it, but I know I did it.
Yeah, which is great. Now,
isn't that common? And I wonder how many of the people going through the divorce now will say to you, because I know as a therapist, and I'm sure Diane has heard it as well, that later when somebody's divorcing, one, I don't know how on earth I stayed in there as long as I did. Mm-hmm. And then two, I don't know what it was that gave me the strength, but I finally knew I had no choice but to get out. So sometimes when you listen to yourself, you really make dramatic changes only because you know it's the only right thing for you to do to be healthy in any way.
Yeah, I think that sort of ties back nicely with my core belief. It's just the individual's power and control over sort of being able to embrace change and address change and jump into that.
Yeah. So kind of want to dive into what it's like to be a divorce lawyer, like what, because as the therapist, I'm just going to use the word crazy. I know it's not
the professional opinion.
It's not a professional tech yet, but there's some crazy, and I'm not going to swear, but I could, stuff that comes across my office. It comes in and people are literally lying to get something, to whether it's get the kids full time, get more money, get, you know, and they're filing child protective service reports that are false. And I'm just wondering, as a lawyer, how do you deal with that? Because with my clients, it doesn't look like the courts really address that. It's kind of like they just kind of like, well, people are being a little emotional. And so what's your take on it, if you don't mind, since we have a divorce lawyer in the house here, I'd love to hear your take.
So when you think about it, a court is not really a place to address maybe emotional wrongs. It's not a place to get revenge. I like to tell this to people because this is not the process for you getting back at him for all those years that you felt like he was ignoring you, or all those years you felt like you were doing all of the household stuff and working and he was just coming in for the fun times. You're not going to get any kind of fulfillment in the divorce process. That's not what the process is about. Courts are interested in how do I divide your stuff up? Where are the kids going to be? And, you know, can we finalize this? That's what they want to clear their docket. Yeah. So not a super welcoming and friendly environment, which is why mediation is a great option for people, because if you have issues that are more sensitive involving your kids, you can come up with, you have more time to to address those and come up with more creative solutions than what just the law will do.
Yeah.
As far as making things up, it depends on the nature of the case. But if you're lying about, you know, something and the court finds out about it, and it's pertaining to custody, the consequences can be very damaging. It's very damaging to your credibility. Because a judge doesn't know you or your spouse.
Mm-hmm.
So if they figure out one of you has lied, then your credibility can be really damaged in front of a judge that might make an ultimate decision in your case. So that is sort of a dicey thing. But yes, I've seen people do lots of crazy things. And the only thing I can say, having seen so much, so many ways that people screw up themselves or screw up their relationships, is just that everybody, in my opinion, everybody is doing something screwy in their relationships. I don't know what normal is. Is there a normal relationship? I don't know what that might be. It makes you really wonder, because people find really weird ways to mess up their relationships.
Yeah. I learned this probably a little later in life than I wish I had, but it's all messy out there, all of it. It's just, how do we make it less messy? And how do we find the joy on that messy path is, you know, kind of my motto, but it's all messy. I used to think that there was some really clean, wonderful, like if you did it well enough, then somehow it was, the rainbows would come out and everything would be just beautiful. And
right.
I see, and it's just not the case. There's still the clouds and the thunderstorms, even with people that are completely, totally lovely human beings. That's my experience too, that it's pretty messy.
It's messy, but also I think you can embrace that and say, you know what, I'm not doing so bad. I'm one of you. We're all human. We're all having this messy position. I'm doing the best I can. I'm actually not doing so badly. No.
So you have a question, Dottie? Something you want?
Well, I was just going to say that none of us as individuals have that clear, simple process. So if you look at each one of us with our own personal process, if only it was a simple linear line, how marvelous life would be.
Yeah.
And so when you've got somebody else, never mind children, when you've got another adult who is also going through his or her unlinear personal growth and professional growth and all of that, right there you bring those two things that are doing this all over the place, you know, just moving and swaying. And all of us, we go forward a step, back a step, and then we jump sometimes three steps ahead. How does any one person keep up with that? You know, and I think, unfortunately, that unless we have such a strong, solid sense of self before we enter relationship, everything about how we define ourselves is brought out in the raw in the process of that relationship. And if the other person isn't as open and willing to grow as you are, you already have built-in animosities or defenses that are taking place. So it really takes a gifted soul who has such a sense of self and an ability and willingness for unconditional love, I think, to truly support things flowing. And that in and of itself is such a rarity. And then you throw babies in the mix, and God bless us and save us. You have a great sense of humor and a whole lot of faith to get through your process.
Oh my gosh.
You know? And so many companies now are asking 60, 70, 80 hours of their employees, which is insanity. Even if you're single, that's insanity. There's so much, I think, that fluidity that didn't take place, you know, years ago when the standard was 9 to 5.
Yeah.
You know, it's a whole other journey now.
Well, and then you can't really wonder, it's not a surprise then, why the divorce rate is so high.
Yeah.
Those are all factors influencing people and how they're able to conduct their relationships.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to conduct their own inner relationship, and it's just so much.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like almost the concept of marriage, if you step back, particularly if you've experienced it, you step back and look at it and like, well, maybe that was a little crazy. Like the whole concept, maybe, you know, I use the word crazy a lot. Sorry. But
yeah, well, I love the concept, but we have to do the pragmatic application.
Yeah.
And it's a gift to be with somebody for whom that pragmatic application works.
Right.
You know, I'm the perpetual optimist.
Nicely stated. So. Yeah. So some of the people that listen to our podcast have been married, and maybe they're thinking about getting married again, or maybe some of them haven't been married at all. Now, there's this whole idea of prenuptials, and I know you've addressed this on your YouTube, and I would direct people to go there because it's really great the way you talk about it. But would you share like your ideas of should someone get a prenuptial, and what are the things you want to make sure you do or have in your prenuptial?
I really like the idea of prenuptials. I know a lot of people find that those are not romantic. It's not a romantic conversation you're having with your spouse.
Right.
Sign this legal document. But it's not a document that's saying, this is all you're going to get from me. That's not what it really is. It's a document that says, I care about you so much that I'm protecting you from me. In the event that we get a divorce and I'm really pissed off at you and I don't like you at that point, I'm protecting
I love that.
Future angry me. That's how much I love you. And in turn, the other person is saying the same thing. I'm protecting you from me. That's how much I love you. So we're going to sign this agreement now while we're in that, you know, the most that we ever love each other ever phase where everything's rosy and great. Because we know that in the future, we may not feel that way.
Right. What an amazing reframe.
I love that.
Yeah, what an absolutely amazing reframe.
And I think when you look at it that way, it has a positive side. You know, it's much more positive. And then I think the other thing that's happening in these prenups, you're working out benefits to each other in a slow and methodical way. You're sort of thinking of things that may be happening in the future, and you're setting a tone for your marriage that's one of deliberateness, being deliberate every day in your marriage. If people could go into marriage being deliberate with how they're, you know, not just I had a bad day, I'm just going to inadvertently say something nasty here, or let's just randomly buy this and we'll figure out who owns it and we'll deal with it later. You're being very deliberate. And if you're deliberate every day, I think your relationship has a better chance of success. So I think it's a good sign when you enter into a marriage with a prenup, because you're showing love for the other person in a future event, and you're expressing this desire to be very deliberate with each other. How are we creating marital assets? How are we creating separate assets? That's all addressed in your prenup.
This is Dr. Dorothy Morton Neville. As a psychotherapist for over 25 years, the founder of four companies, an international speaker, and an executive coach, I'm well aware of how absolutely isolating it can be to be a successful career woman. As a result, I've created a virtual membership program for women leaders who are equally isolated and need that place to get confidential feedback, to brainstorm, gain insight, share experiences, and so much more. Join me. Become a member of my community. I'd love to see you there. Check out the details on my website, askdrdorothy.com, or email me at dorothy@askdrdorothy.com. I'd love to tell you all about it and have you become a member of the community.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Diane. We're taking a little break from the podcast. Just wanted to remind you that I have created a mobile application called Dare You. And if you haven't already downloaded it onto your phone, please go to iTunes and download it, and you will get a dare and a quote on a daily basis that is guaranteed, quote unquote, to increase your emotional intelligence one dare at a time. All right. And you want to increase your emotional intelligence. Why? Because it makes everything better in your life. And if you don't have an iTunes account, that's cool. Because what you can do is go to my website, Simply Schrocking. That's my last name with ING, simplyschrocking.com. Sign up there and we'll get your dares and your quotes sent to you in your email. All right. Back to the podcast.
I love that. I get this image of people going, like, you know how they set up, okay, this is where, what are they called, where you're, people are going to buy you gifts for your wedding. A registry. Okay. So part of the registry is a can, and it's a can with a prenuptial in it, the forms. And it'll say what you just said. I'm doing this because I love you this much. And they open the can, they do the prenuptial, they submit it to a lawyer or whatever to get a doc, and then they have it. It's like such, you can take that if you want and market it. But I would love that, because people aren't thinking that way. They're thinking like, oh, this is, you know, we're doing this because we don't love each other that much. Or maybe he doesn't love me as much as I thought. Or maybe she doesn't really care that much. Or she's going
already to, has a foot out the door.
Yeah. Yeah. So I love that idea. Have you taught classes on prenuptials? Because that's we need that, I think.
I mean, I think if people, it's getting married is very easy. It's easy to go get the license, and then, you know, you say a few words and you're married. Getting divorced is a huge process. And I think if people realize this is what I'm committing to, and this is what I need to do, look forward to in the future, and this is what I might have to do eventually to undo this, they would be much more, you know, careful about just, oh, it's just a little commitment ceremony, it's not a big deal kind of thinking, I think.
No, I like that. And so how do we instill that? You know, how do we, I mean, I really love that. And I think premarital counseling is a great idea. People really talking about what are their differences and what really holds them together and what's important to them. But this idea of a prenuptial as a gift of love.
Yeah. I don't know how you get to the heart of that. I think that we do a bad job just overall with our education system. And I think that if we address some of these things with our kids starting early, learning how to talk more about our emotions, I'm sure you might feel that way as therapists, you know, learning how to have self-esteem, learning how to think about, you know, your internal process. And you could throw in, you know, relationships and how to deal with people and, you know, maybe an element of anger management, maybe, you know, different things like that. Those should all be things that we're talking to our kids about. And I'm definitely one who talks to my kids about a lot of things. But I think if we have that in schools where people whose parents maybe not be as self-reflective as we'd like, if we had that to reach more students, that maybe would facilitate a change, you know, overall. But I don't think that's in the cards.
Yeah. Well, you know. Yeah. It requires so much more mindful living, so much more conscious living on the minds of so many adults. And I've spent, no, Diane and I have both spent years trying to help adults be that mindful and that conscious with that level of emotional intelligence so that they can do that kind of thing. So, but I do think that mindfulness and ideas like that are becoming more, I don't want to say common, but they're becoming more part of awareness. And hopefully you've got more and more people who are moving into that level of awareness that they know themselves well enough before they enter a serious relationship or take a relationship to that level of seriousness, you know, and allow themselves to commit fully and want to go in on every level with that safety because of that level of commitment, you know? It's a lot.
All right. So all of this, we were talking about prenuptials and how we can really kind of weave that into pragmatic, but also a caring, loving gesture rather than, well, I want to take everything from you, or I'm going to get everything, or you're going to take everything away. So I love that concept. And, you know, the whole idea of telling the truth in getting into a marriage, I think that we could do a whole podcast just on that. Is in your experience, what are people coming to you when they're coming for a divorce? What is the thing that happens or is most commonly happens when people are wanting a divorce?
In terms of why they're getting divorced?
Yeah, they're not just this irreconcilable differences or, you know, that kind of thing. But what's really the number one season?
I would say, you know, maybe the top three reasons. Number one would be some sort of financial crisis has happened in the family. There, or, you know, somebody has way more money than the other party, and the other party's just sort of in the dark. So I'm either dealing with the person who has the finances or the person who doesn't know anything.
Sure.
And, you know, one or the other of them is just done with the situation, but this crisis has happened and it's related, all tied up in their finances. And they haven't done a good job of being mindful with each other and with themselves about what's happening with their finances. So that's a crucial number one. Number two, infidelity, adultery. That's a big one. Somebody's become tired of the other person, feels like maybe they've changed or they want to do their own personal growth and they don't see it, and they've met somebody and it sort of sparked something in them to change, and it's less fulfilling. And then number three, and I don't mean this to sound cynical, but it's incredibly true, children. Children happen, and it knocks the relationship that was already weak to begin with into just a really bad place. So you would be shocked at how many calls I get from people who have very new babies. And usually I try to encourage them to, you know, give it a few more months. That first year is really, really difficult. It changes the dynamic so much.
Yes.
So children happen, and that's not something you can avoid necessarily, but your relationship needs to be in a very good place for that to happen. So you would want to work on your relationship before having kids. Kids is not, they're not a solution to a bad relationship.
Ooh, no, they're a challenge to a good relationship. you know, what I find funny now, and I just see, you know, younger ones I know, their illusion that they're going to get a dog and that will help them learn how to parent, and they can see how each one parents. And I'm thinking, how sweet and innocent and dumb.
You know what? I mean, at least that's something mindful that they're doing.
Yes. Yeah.
Rather than just, hey, guess what? We're going to have this baby and, you know, not even have thought about it. So at least that's a little bit of something.
Yeah.
Right.
Innocence, but something. Innocence, but something.
Well, yeah, I've had a couple of conversations with God around linking sex with having children, birth of children. Like, I'm not sure that was a great idea, other than because if we could have sex and never have the outcome of birth, I think the population would maybe go away. I'm not sure. No, kids can be a tremendous stressor. And I think the other thing is that we think, one, that we're going to be the same after kids come into our lives, and that our children are somehow going to come out with those little cute bands on their heads, or, you know, just a smile and giggle all the time.
But the truth is, Diane, whether we're talking marriage or children, it doesn't matter how conscious you are. You have no idea what you're walking into.
That's true.
You just don't. And I say that when I adore my two children, they're adults now. But the fact is, there was nobody who could have prepared me for what that would have meant to have a child. And intellectually, they can give you the information. They can tell me how to do a diaper. They can tell me how to do this or that.
Sure.
But that psycho-spiritual impact of marriage, it's not better than dating because now you have him with you 24/7. Not really. And there are parts about that that are far better than just dating. And there are parts of that that are far more stressful than just dating. But until you've had the experience, you don't know that experience. Yeah. Until you have that child running around, you can't even go pee by yourself ever again. You know, until you have that experience, it's acute. Isn't that cute? When you just want to go in the bathroom and cry and just have 15 minutes to yourself.
Right.
Then it's not cute anymore.
Well, and they're not romantic. They're not, after they come out, they're not romantic at all.
But it's also like, and until you've lived in certain situations, you don't know how you're going to respond to them. It's all intellectual.
Right.
And sadly, I think that the opportunity for the two people to work it out in a healthy way doesn't take place when they're both being required to work ridiculous hours. Mm-hmm. And then kids don't play sports outside in the front yard anymore. They now belong to leagues that are travel teams, and they're going all over the place, sure. And they're doing everything. Yeah. And the stress is enormous. And sadly, divorce lawyers are very busy. You know, I'm very glad for you, but it's just how sadly that is what's happening. So I think your ability to support people going through that with as little trauma as possible is truly the gift you bring to the packet.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't want you to be confused or there to be any confusion. Like, if we have a contested case and you tell me I need to gut your spouse, I will do it. I can do that. But I'm also interested in, at first, I try to talk with my clients and find out who are they and what are their goals. And I make careful notes about what they tell me initially that they want, things that they're trying to do, and how can we get them into a place where they're going to be in a good place to let go of some of that anger eventually, to let go of some of that hurt, to try to get your issues resolved so that we can actually work into some sort of practical solution or settlement, or sometimes we have to have a trial. If you're not involved in your own emotional process while I'm handling your legal process, you're going to come out at the back end worse for the wear. There's no other way around that.
Yeah.
Personally, I like when my clients come out of the back end and they're ready for this new life and they can see, you know, they've let go of a lot of baggage, they've addressed their issues, and they can see how they're going to move forward and make, you know, make it a fresh start and make something great again, something new.
Right. Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah. No, I have no illusions that if I needed a divorce lawyer it was contested, I would hire you because I know you'd go for it. I get it. You have a job to do and you're going to do it. That's what you get hired to do. I do have a question, though, about the number one thing that you said, financial crisis, and that one person typically in that situation, that scenario, doesn't really know about the finances. Is that usually the woman or not?
Oh.
Yeah.
No, the woman. I mean, let's face it, there's only so much we can do. And statistically, we're taking on more of the mental load in the household, more of the mental load with the children. And sometimes the finances, we're just putting faith that, you know, he's the one, he's earning more. Statistically, he is earning more. So he should have more control over that situation. And we're not necessarily paying attention. And I think my interactions with women who don't work at all, they're staying at home and raising their children. So that is work, but they're not earning
income. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. But they're not earning income, is that they don't want to necessarily question the income. They feel, you know, the balance of power in that relationship, it can really be off, and they feel concerned, or they're just too afraid to question it, or they feel like they're almost infant, you know, they're almost like a child in the relationship because they have to ask for money or they have to try to, you know, they're not in control of something in their lives bringing in money. And I think that when you see relationships like that, it makes me deeply concerned that women really should have some source of income. Even you want to stay home with your kids, and I can completely understand that. We all have, everyone who works outside of the home has that constant sort of struggle, you know, that mommy guilt and leaving them with, you know, a daycare or something. But you get something that's self-validating by earning something.
To me, everything, it moves into that bigger picture that, you know, speaking as an executive coach for women, I see that women either, whether we're talking C-suite or new entrepreneur, what we're talking is women who have a concept of control and they have a concept of victim. Mm. And my work is generally how to teach them about the concept of power.
Mm. I'd love
because
that.
Because something they don't comprehend. Either they're in control of the situation or they're being victimized by somebody. And the truth is, when you're empowered, you're not being controlled, and you're not a victim. Mm-hmm. You're much more self-defined and self-directed. Well, and you start responding rather than reacting to whatever stimuli shows up.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you speak of these women, I've worked with so many of them, and it just breaks my heart.
Yeah.
And it's so much bigger than just money. It's so much bigger than just the dynamics of this one relationship. It's how they're in relationship with their children, with their friends, with their extended family. How to teach a woman how to be empowered and to own her own power, and not just thinking, someday I'm not going to be the victim, I'm going to be in control of the finances. Well, what if you're not in control of the finances? What if you're simply empowered?
Right. Well, your knowledge is power. You know, to know.
Well, and a willingness to own it.
Right.
Well, willingness to claim your place on the planet is massive.
I think it might also be, you know, it also might be a result of how did they come into this relationship dynamic? You know, if they did it in a very mindful way by looking at who's better suited to deal with the children and deal with the home, you know, maybe it's her or maybe it's him. Maybe mm-hmm. he has a better temperament for dealing with those kinds of things. You know, they came into this situation in a mindful way, and then they develop a way to talk about their finances that's open and honest, and they force themselves to do it, you know, monthly or every couple of months. They sit down and look at what's going on. Mm-hmm. That's a different situation, but I think a lot of times they sort of slide into it. They're not thinking about it, but, you know, it just doesn't make sense for her to work anymore. She wasn't in that great a job anyway, and the cost of daycare is going to outweigh her salary.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then from there, they're not talking about it. They're not thinking about it, and they're not being mindful about it. And it turns into a lot of resentment. He's resentful because he's working with other women who do have kids. So he can see that that is a possible, you know, thing, and those women don't just talk about their kids all day. They have exciting intellectual things to talk about. And then she's resentful because she's stuck at home and he doesn't recognize how much work is involved in that. And it just creates a really bad sort of cycle that is hard for people to break out of. And frankly, even if you are working, you can get into that resentment. And I say this from a personal my personal experience, I don't think that my ex-husband and I would be such great friends if he hadn't come to me after his first weekend with the kids and said, I am so sorry. I had no idea how hard this is. I had no idea how much work you were doing. And when he said that, I was able to just release so much of my resentment that I had working, dealing with the kids and making appointments and buying groceries and doing all the cooking. I was able to release that.
Right.
And he'd be at the same place if he hadn't sort of recognized that.
How good for you and how good for him, you know, that he was grown enough to be able to do that. You know, you bring up something, and we're getting close to end here, but you bring up something that I hadn't thought about, but I've run into a few times recently when the husband stays home. Mm-hmm. And the wife works.
Yeah.
And how, in my experience, each time she becomes resentful after a number of years, that she's out there, even though this was a contract they both created, neither one, you know, was insistent upon it, that she becomes resentful because she's out there making all the money. And her personality anyway would have lend itself to the workaholic or to the whatever you want to use. But now she's resentful because he's home while she's working. And he's now feeling somewhat impotent because he has a difficulty with the money because she's already resentful about doing all the working and he's not bringing anything in. So now he's uncomfortable really getting a balance on the finances. And it's reversal, but I think any new trend, until it's adapted, there's still mixed emotions that go into that factor.
Mm-hmm.
You know? We're truly in a transitionary process. And thank God, even if it isn't consistent, that mediation does exist and it can be used. And we can begin to approach a really difficult situation with another perspective that doesn't have to be all about who kills who. in the process.
Right. And I'm sure no one's talking about any of the political stuff going on in the dynamics of relationship in New York. They probably don't talk about the president at all or any of that.
Diane.
I know, I'll get in trouble. I don't care.
I know of several instances where women have called me and said, you know, my husband's a Trump supporter and I need out. I've got to be out of this.
Interesting. So, wow. Okay.
I wouldn't say nobody's talking about it. Yeah. Definitely.
I was kind of tongue in cheek on that because I can only imagine, you know, looking at the dynamics there in terms of marriages and in terms of infidelity, in terms of how, you know, people are dealing with children and who controls the money and all of that. I mean, we just have depending on how you want to look at it, a drama or a sitcom going on and that we can view nationally. And so interesting.
I am waiting for Melania to call me. I mean,
yeah. Well, I hope she does call you because I know that you'll do a really good job. you'll do what needs to be done. But all right. So speaking of what needs to be done, we need to wrap things up here. But I always like, and we always like to ask our clients, because Truth and Double Daring, right? It was a big dare for us to do the podcast. And if you listen to the first podcast, you'll know that when I asked Dottie about going into podcasting, I said, let's do a podcast. And she was so enthusiastic and so excited. And then she said the next thing out of her mouth was, what's a podcast? And so it was really like, that was the truth. And the dare was, can we do this? And we said, yes, we're doing this. Truth and Double Daring. Here we go. So what is a dare in your life? Ours was, you know, one of them was doing a podcast, which we thoroughly love and enjoy. And so glad you're here with us today. What's a dare in your personal or your professional life? It doesn't matter, big, small, a dare that's right there and you know you need to take.
Oh my gosh. I think that I've been sort of actively dipping my toe into doing some other types, some other areas of law on a pro bono basis. I've been actively involved with Lawyer Moms of America. It's a volunteer group, and we've been helping to fight for family reunification for the migrants that were separated, the children that were separated from their families. I think I'm possibly looking at a dare of maybe getting more involved in politics from there because
we need change. Yes.
Look at the Supreme Court. That's not making our laws. Our laws are being made by Congress. There are three branches of the government. And people tend to forget that. And we've got way too many, even in our last president, we had somebody issuing way too many executive orders. That's not how you legislate. That's not the will of the people.
Right.
So bring that back into our Congress. And I think that's maybe a more personal dare, if you will, that I'm looking at.
Well, I dare you to look at that even more deeply, because I think that when I'm talking with young people, and I'm talking about people in their 20s, mid-20s or early 30s, they're looking at politics because they see if the people don't have a voice, that it's not going to get better out there. And they want this world to be better. And I want to support you and anyone who's willing to put their voice out there and do the things that are right and just and true. So I encourage you and maybe even dare you. All right. All right.
We need more women in politics.
More women and more voices of truth and honesty. So very cool. Okay. Final question. Are you ready? Here we go. Drum roll. Okay. So we ask everyone this question, and it is simply, you're at the end of your life, 10 million years down the road, you've lived a long, full life, but all that you've done is not accessible to anyone. You can't share it with them, but you do get an opportunity to share a golden wisdom with them, one thing that you've learned that you can impart. And the cool thing is everyone's listening, and they're going to go and do that thing. What is it?
Okay, this is what I would probably tell people. Don't be afraid to be alone. Because I think I see it so many times. People are afraid of divorce. They're afraid of being alone. And it's a truly wonderful experience to know yourself, to be comfortable being by yourself. I crack myself up. I mean, I'm hilarious. So, but it really is. You need to be able to enjoy being alone and being yourself and being alone. And I think that once you are able to do that, then maybe you are ready to be in a relationship with somebody else, because you do have that. I think you guys have both said that sort of self worth, that sort of self confidence. You know yourself well enough to be in a relationship. So just don't be afraid to be alone.
Wow. Oh God, great, great, great message. It needs to be said 1,000 times over.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it's so important. And you're the first person that's actually said that on any of our podcasts. So thank you for that. And coming from a divorce lawyer, I think anyone listening to this podcast, write it down, folks. More time really understanding, being alone and understanding who you are. And going back to your core truth is believe in the power of the individual. You know, it ties right into your core truth. And so thank you for being on Truth and Double Daring with Dottie and Diane. And we loved having you here. And I know that people are going to hear some little things that will inspire them to tell their truth and dare more boldly. Thank you. Thanks for being here. Good luck with all the things that you're doing in your life. Appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Take care.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us today. We're thrilled to have you here with us, and we're looking forward to reconnecting with you in our next podcast at Truth and Double Daring with Dottie and Diane.